Hey there, superfans. This is Superman's pal, Mike Carlin, editor of the Death of Superman comic book series, writer on the Superboy TV series, and creative director of animation for DC Entertainment. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, superfans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I am your host, Joe Stuber. I hope you had an amazing week. I know I did. Thanks so much for spending the next hour or so with me here in the lair, along with my guest for this week, the creative director of animation for DC Entertainment, Mike Carlin. He's going to be here in a few minutes. That's going to be a fun conversation. Now, you might recall back on episode 92 of Comic Book Central, I moderated a Q&A with Mike and the Dark Knight detective himself, Batman, from Batman the Animated Series, actor Kevin Conroy. That was at Terrificon in Connecticut. During that panel, we talked a lot about Batman the Animated Series, obviously, but we also got into some of the DC animated projects that Mike and his team have been bringing us over the past several years. There are a lot of them. It's almost impossible to keep up with them. They're putting out a lot of content. So we got into those some of those projects there. So after today's show, if you want to know even more about DC Animation, if you haven't checked out that episode, it's episode 92, be sure to go back and download and check it out. This week, we're not only going to talk about the latest and greatest in the world of DC Animation, there's some good stuff coming up, we're also going to focus on Mike's scripting for the Superboy television series back in the late 80s and early 90s. If you're a fan of that show, or if you just want to know more about it, I highly recommend you check out the Superboy homepage at superboyhomepage.com. That website is run by my buddy Sam Rizzo. He is a huge Superboy fan. Look, I love the show. You love the show. Sam's the expert. Be sure to check that world out. He knows everything about the Superboy television series. There's a ton of stuff out there as well. Here on Comic Book Central, if you haven't already, be sure to download episodes 3, 13, and 32. Those episodes, Ilya Salkind, early on in the run of the show, producer of the Superboy television series, Jay Underwood, the Kryptonite Kid, and the Boy of Steel himself, Superboy Gerard Christopher. He was on episode 32. You can find those episodes. You can find every episode of Comic Book Central on iTunes. Subscribe to the show. For those that are leaving reviews, I really appreciate it. You guys have been very nice to do that. You've said some nice things. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Blueberry and Stitcher, if you're not on iTunes, we're there. Of course, the virtual lair, my website, comicbookcentral.net. That is the hub. The social network links are there as well for Facebook and Twitter. Facebook, it's facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Twitter at comicbookctrl. You can retweet and share the show. I really appreciate when you do that. It gets it out to so many more listeners. A lot of cool guests have stopped by to chat. Yet another one stopping by today. Before we get to the super talk, take a listen, learn a thing or two or three, and then it's time to sit back for a conversation with Mike Carlin. Mike Carlin was definitely a comic book kid growing up, and he's definitely a comic book kid at heart, working at DC Comics, the home of Wonder Woman, Batman, and our favorite big blue Boy Scout, Superman. In fact, DC Comics is where Mike got his start in the biz, as an intern in the mid-70s. He went on then to study cartooning with the legendary Harvey Kurtzman and Will Eisner at New York's School of Visual Arts. Will Eisner, that is a name you're going to hear again very shortly. After college, Mike worked for DC's rival Marvel Comics, tackling some of the writing and artwork from Marvel's Crazy magazine. It was at Marvel where Mike began the comic book editing part of his career, working on titles such as Captain America and the Fantastic Four. Mike then took those editing skills back to where it all began, DC Comics, where he and his super talented team of comic book creators launched the Death and Return of Superman. That storyline went way beyond the world of comic books. It became a pop culture phenomenon. It made news headlines around the world, and it scored Mike the Will Eisner Comic Industry Award for Best Editor. That story also introduced the Man of Steel's monstrous villain, Doomsday, who just so happens to be blowing up the internet right now in the latest Batman v Superman trailer. During his tenure as editor at DC, Mike also found the time to write some of the most memorable episodes of the Superboy TV series, featuring such classic villains as Metallo, Bizarro, and the Kryptonite Kid. In 2010, DC Comics began the move from the East Coast to the West. Mike was a big part of that change as DC's representative on Warner Brothers animated projects. Now, this past summer, I got a chance to cross paths with my guest today at Terrificon in Connecticut, where we shared the stage with the Dark Knight detective himself, Kevin Conroy. Today, he's got the spotlight all to himself. He is an Eisner Award-winning editor. He is the creative director, animation of DC Entertainment, a big Comic Book Central. Welcome to Mike Carlin. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the show. We had some fun time this summer. That was fun. I loved that Q&A.
It was great. It was really great. It was pretty much my first panel since taking the job of creative director over animation. Obviously, I've done a million panels as a comic book editor, but it was kind of fun to get onto that other side of the gig. It was really fun. And Kevin Conroy was great.
Look, we're talking about DC Animation. What better way than to have the animated Batman himself? I mean, does it get better than that?
Nope, it was very cool.
This is crazy. You get to work with him a bunch of times, too. We'll talk about that. Look, first things first. I record these interviews ahead of time, so people know that. You're recording about a week ahead. You were one of the, as I mentioned to you in Connecticut, you were one of the culprits in the death of Superman back in the 90s. You're the one of the ones that killed him off.
I was the ringleader.
Yes, you were. He died at the hands of Doomsday, one of the greatest comic book villains ever created. We're recording this interview less than 24 hours after the latest Batman v. Superman trailer. Sounds like a court case, Batman v. Superman. I got to ask you, your thoughts on the feature film version of Doomsday?
What makes you think I even saw that?
Because I'm on your Facebook page and you're like, you post often.
But 2 seconds after it happened, everybody jumped on it.
It blew up the internet. You were involved in this. Was that the first time you saw it? You had to have seen the trailer before then.
No. They don't show it. Everything's
the DC guy.
They don't want any, and honestly, I don't want to know about anything, because if something does leak, it's not going to be my fault.
But you had to have sneaked into somebody's office and just went, look, just roll that bad boy for me.
Never saw a piece of that until last night.
Okay, so you're watching Jimmy Kimmel.
And that's fine, because I'm a fan, too. You know, I like going to the movies.
Okay, so from fanboy perspective, look, we got a couple different levels here. Fanboy perspective, and a guy that pretty much drove the bus on this whole thing. What were your thoughts when you first saw feature film version Doomsday?
I thought it looks cool. I definitely, you know, obviously it's not a direct copy of what we did, but to hear that roar and to then know what was coming, it was pretty cool.
Did you know he was coming?
I definitely liked it. I had heard rumors that something like that was in the works.
Okay.
I hadn't seen anything.
All right. So, we're kind of watching all this stuff, and it's Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And then all of a sudden, Doomsday comes out and we're like, okay, there we go.
Mm-hmm. I was happy to see Wonder Woman, too. I thought she looked awesome. I think my favorite thing on the internet last night after the trailer was released were all the people writing, I always knew Ben Affleck would be a great Batman. I was like, yeah, I don't remember that being typed much in the last year.
Yeah, were these the same people that knew Michael Keaton would be the greatest Batman?
Oh, he's a genius.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty funny to see all that, because now they had other things to pick on. Now they have Lex Luthor and, you know, and their version of Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
He's bearing the brunt of the Ben Affleck news, it seems like.
It's all, look, you're going to have internet. You're going to have internet haters. That all even, well, we talked to Michael Uslan. He was glad that the internet really wasn't around when Keaton was. I mean,
they were
storming the castle when Keaton was cast.
I think the internet was invented because they cast Michael Keaton as Batman, and that's when everybody said, "I need to have a place to rant and rave about this."
Some viable platform for my rage.
Internet.
That is a great theory.
I'm glad that there wasn't a lot of internet going on when the death of Superman happened. I think that it would have been a lot harder to keep our secrets.
What do you think that would have done if the internet had been around like we have today? When, I mean, that was, we had heard inklings, we knew what was coming, but what do you think would have happened if the death of Superman would have happened in 2015?
I don't, you know, obviously I don't know what had happened, but I do know that a lot of people who work on comics, the minute somebody says something on the internet, it does influence what they do next. And I'm glad that that kind of influence wasn't happening to me or to any of the guys writing and drawing the comics, because you do got to trust your gut, and you got to just go with what your instincts are. And it's tough to follow your instincts when people are second guessing you all the time.
And a ton of moving parts with that story. A lot of moving parts.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like the guys who were doing the Superman versus Batman movie. It's like, it takes, you know, a lot of conviction to stick with your plan when people are out there complaining about what they're hearing about. And, you know, and then ultimately, I just don't know why after all these years that it's just not normal to wait till you see the thing to complain about it. And, you know, then complain. If you paid your money, you bought the right to complain your head off.
I agree. Yeah, I'm waiting. I'm reserving judgment until I see it. Yeah, I mean,
well,
I listeners of the show know that I, you know what I feel about Man of Steel, but I'll reserve judgment until I see a movie. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the stuff that was a little weird to me, like, you know, when we were doing Lex Luthor in the 80s and the 90s, you know, we were basing him on a Wall Street model and a Donald Trump kind of model and a kind of businessman. And what they're going to do in this movie, even though it's not what we were doing in the comics, is something that's more modern. I mean, this is a dot-com millionaire. This is somebody, or somebody who inherited all his millions from his family and is a guy with a, you know, a kid's attitude. So until I see how that all fits together, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, and every generation's going to have their tale. I mean, yeah, you can't play the George Reeves or the Christopher Reeve version over and over and over again. We talk about different versions. Doomsday, we talk about this isn't the first time Doomsday was brought to life. We had Smallville.
Yeah,
he was on Smallville. He an animated version.
Very different.
Yeah, and we got your version brought to life in the anime. Do you have a favorite Doomsday version? let's include the feature film too, because we got a little snippet of that.
My favorite version is on my desk, and it's a Mattel signature collection Doomsday in the containment suit that they released about a year ago. And that's my favorite version of Doomsday, is a 12-inch toy.
Okay. I've got the Doomsday, what was it, the two-pack, the Superman Doomsday two-pack, and he's got this kind of funky costume on.
Yeah, those are fun.
I like that. Yeah, I like having those out there on the desk.
I like that stuff. And, okay. You know, and the Doomsday in the animated movie was great. It just was a different story after Doomsday and Superman fought. They went a completely different way.
Yeah, and you got to tell the tale in about an hour and a half or so.
But they're adaptations. They're adaptations. Stuff has to be altered. They have a different goal. They have a different audience. You know, people who are reading the Death of Superman comic books, many of them were already reading the books before, so they knew things that we didn't have to re-explain. Or if you were just joining, you could go back and find those comics pretty easily to get caught up if you wanted to.
Right.
But if you're doing the, you know, a 72-minute movie, you got to kind of deal with shorthand or just cut stuff and move stuff around and change things, take characters out just because you don't have enough time to create animated assets for 500 characters. You know, a funeral procession in a cartoon is harder to do than a drawing in a comic.
It doesn't play as well in an animated feature.
Yeah,
four
guys.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned four clones of them.
You mentioned you're a fanboy. What comic books did you read as a kid? And I get a sense you kind of came into the comic book age at a really cool time.
It was perfect. First of all, my mother was a comic book fan, and that
get
was
out
unusual
of town.
Back in the early 60s.
Everybody's mother throws their comic books away. You got yours. Nope. Yours was the
my
comic
mother,
book fan. Nice.
My mother would read my comics when I went to bed.
Oh.
And the worst thing she did was she would fold the covers back, and I had to train her.
That's okay. They survived. They did not hit.
But
the
she was paying for them too, so it was tough. But she loved Superman and Wonder Woman. So I didn't get a lot of Marvel comics at home. She brought home Superman comics and Justice League. And then obviously the Batman TV show came along, and then I started wanting Batman comics. And she supported that thing. My father thought comics were a dumb thing, and by the time I was going to art school, he was like, maybe you should go to computer school too, just as a backup.
Wow, that's pretty advanced, though, for that time.
That was forward thinking, especially
Go dad. I mean, honest to be, you
he
probably could have...
wrong.
No, it you could have been
okay
Bill Gates.
Me, but he wasn't wrong. I had no backup plan. And that would
go dad. If he's gonna trounce comic books, at least go computers in the 60s.
Yep. Yeah, it was definitely, he was way ahead of the curve on that kind of thing, because he saw, you know, he saw that I wasn't going to be in construction like he was.
Yeah.
Because I'm soft. I was a soft kid.
You had some awesome parents, though, man. That's pretty
good. Oh, yeah, no, they were good. And the fact that my mother collected EC comics with her Supermans and Wonder Womans was even more amazing.
Oh, wow.
She loved that stuff. She loved it.
Okay. So, yeah, I was kind of curious.
Cool. She brought me to my first comic convention in 69.
Where was that?
The New York Phil Suling show. And, she read about it in the Daily News and took me into the city. She took the list of comics I wanted, and she went around and haggled with everybody and bought them while I got sketches from the artists that I liked.
Oh, cool, Mom.
Awesome. It was awesome.
Cool, Mom. Now, okay, what was it about the comic books? Because you started to go into the art field at one point. So was it the art? Was it the writing? Was it the adventures? Was it the colors? What was it about comic books that made young Mikey Carlin go, this is what I want?
Well, I just used to like to, you know, I guess the colors of the DC comics were much brighter than the Marvel comics. And, you know, the characters, it was fun for me to learn. You know how kids, like little boys especially, like to learn the names of all the dinosaurs?
Mm-hmm.
I like to learn the names of all the Legionnaires and what planets they came from. You know, so I like to be the guy on the block who knew all the trivia that was going on. So that was really fun for me. And then I can draw a little bit. So I went to the High School of Art and Design in New York City. And I ended up getting an internship at DC Comics in 1974. So I've been involved with DC for 40 years. One way or another.
Yeah, it was kind of like a back and forth thing. You know, for people that don't know, I mean, we know you as a DC guy through and through, but there's a little bit of Marvel in your background. We'll talk about it. Sorry, DC folks. I know we want to talk about DC, but I'm curious. Okay, we talk about the art, we talk about the writing, we talk about the editing. What did you learn from Stan Lee from your time working at Marvel that you were able to now sort of take with you through your career?
The funny thing, I was just talking about this today with some of the younger editors here at DC. When we were, right before we were doing The Death of Superman, we were starting to get some critical notice for the Superman books and their interlocking continuity. And then, you know, basically we had ramped up to four titles a month, which was pretty much a weekly comic.
Yeah, and for the listeners that don't know that, we had the little triangle system.
Yeah.
Was it the triangle
system? I invented that because I couldn't keep track of it.
Is that where that came from?
It wasn't just for you guys. It was for me.
Oh, okay. This was the 8, 9, 10, 11. So we knew which order the comics went in.
Right. And that way, if you did want to backtrack and find stuff, you would know, you know, you wouldn't have to look at the ship date or whatever.
Yeah, just pick the number. That was the easiest thing.
Right there on the cover. When we were doing these books, I guess what I learned from Marvel, maybe not directly from Stan Lee, because by the time I worked at Marvel, Jim Shooter was in charge there. But it was, you know, the history of Marvel kind of influenced everything that Marvel was still doing into the 80s. If you look at the Superman books of that time, what we were trying to do, and some of my cronies who were helping me were former Marvel people like Roger Stern and Louise Simonson, and guys like Jerry Ordway and Dan Jurgens, who were just as big fans of Marvel stuff, was we, by interlocking the books, we were doing the best Marvel comic that Marvel wasn't publishing in the Superman comics. And all the stuff we did with the supporting cast, all the side characters, that was stuff that I got from reading Daredevil comics when I was a kid. Daredevil and X-Men were my favorite comics before Claremont and Frank Miller got a hold of them. I liked them even before that. Hmm. And I know I'm supposed to like Spider-Man and Fantastic Four just as much, but Daredevil and X-Men were my favorites. So the Daredevil stuff had a million supporting characters who were not in costumes, but I cared about everybody. And that's kind of something that I think is good for any comic, is if you are going to care about the hero, you have to put him next to a guy that looks like Perry White so that Superman looks more impressive. And a guy like Perry White is not going to be able to save himself in a situation that Superman can help him with. So you give him that, you know, kind of family that you know he cares about, so that you care about the story as well. So we did a lot of that soap opera stuff, and people really responded to it. And honestly, when we came up with the Death of Superman story, we thought this has been done not only in Superman comics, but with other characters. This is just the next adventure. This is the thing we're going to try to put our stamp on, but it was nothing new. And it was only that for some reason, it was a slow news day that there was no war started or Madonna didn't get married. And it was just front page news for some reason. And then we couldn't even stop it. We didn't want the news out 3 months before the comic came out, because then people would forget about it in 3 months. But nobody forgot. They stuck with this one. And it was just like it was out of our control. But we just thought it was the next part of his soap opera. So when you kill him, the fact that Bibbo is crying and Jimmy Olsen is upset that he took the picture of his dead body, and Lois Lane, who now knows that Clark Kent and Superman are the same person, it was like that drove it home. And we were able to do months and months worth of comics with no Superman in them, because you cared about the side characters.
Well, I mean, you put that era in a whole new perspective for me, because, you know, as I've probably mentioned on the show before, and people that know me know that, like, during the 80s, I kind of like got out of comics a little bit, and it was the death of Superman, knowing that was on the horizon, that brought me back into it. Mm-hmm. Thankful for your dear mortgage for fanboys like us. But I think it was
part of what kept me hired at DC for a few years too, which is good.
Well, and the thing, you put that into perspective, because like I grew up on the Marvel comics of the 70s, and I never really thought about it in that way. But you're right. That I think that was the appeal to me, was that other cast of characters, that I started to care about things more than just Superman.
Well, Superman had that, and it had it pretty early on because of things like the Adventures of Superman TV show. I mean, there's no other characters. There's no, you know, Alfred Pennyworth comic. There's no other, you know, whoever Spider-Man's girlfriend is. There's no Gwen Stacy comic. But there was a Lois Lane comic. And there was a Jimmy Olsen comic. It's like, what civilian characters get comics? And they were just, they weren't spies. They were just civilians.
Yeah.
So these characters, people did care about them for a long time. Maybe because Jack Larson was appealing, maybe because Noel Neill was fun. You know, it's like they spent a lot of energy on those characters, probably on the TV show, because they couldn't afford to be showing Superman flying for a half an hour.
Right. Or even Richard Donner movie, you know, he talked about verisimilitude and bringing that realism. We cared about all the characters around Christopher Reeve.
It's really true. And
that's a good point.
You didn't get that from any other characters in comics. So
yeah.
We felt an obligation to make sure that, you know, even though we were doing something that seemed like heresy to kill Superman, that we were really doing, what we were trying to do was remind people that they should care about Superman. And at that point, there were characters like Wolverine and the Punisher and Lobo who were out there, and they were all really popular. And it was like, man, everybody thinks Superman's a Boy Scout, but he's the hero you're supposed to be emulating, not Lobo, you know, not Wolverine. You don't kill everybody and ask questions later. We were frustrated. So we said, okay, what would your reaction be if all you had were Lobos and Wolverines, and we took Superman away. And we put that in the context of the civilians in his universe, but it really reflected what the real world reacted to. I had a woman come up and start yelling at me. You know, how dare you kill Superman? You know, he belongs to all of us. And she was really mad. And I said to her, I said, when was the last time you bought a Superman comic? And she said, well, it's been a long time. And I said, you killed Superman. If you don't water the plants, they die. So you got to kind of support these things or they will go away. You know, everybody's got a favorite thing that got canceled or disappeared or whatever. They don't just go away because somebody says, I hate that, let's stop it. They go away because there's not enough people supporting it. And that's a frustration. You know, so we played out our own personal frustrations in the pages of the comics, and it really paid off.
Yeah, it did. Well, but don't get me started on violent superheroes, because I may really want Mike Carlin writing Superman movies moving forward.
Well, you know, I never did it. I could, but if I was the editor of Lobo, I would just not do him differently. He's a different character. He should be different. But if I'm the editor of Superman, I gotta respect. I mean, that's the thing. We did things that seemed outrageous. You know, we changed him into an electric blue costume, and everybody gets mad that he has a mullet and all this stuff. And it's like, if all you care about is whether he's wearing red pants outside, you're really not reading the stories.
Yeah.
Because you're supposed to be reading about a character and a person. And it was our goal to not build up ourselves and not build up DC, not build up Dan Jurgens or Jerry Ordway. But we were all there to build up Superman. And we took it really seriously. And that was the job, you know. And ultimately, I think that there's room for violent heroes out there. The Punisher comics are fine comics. They're good comics. They're just not, to me, necessarily the kind of hero that we needed the world to be responding to. I mean, that Punisher is a Death Wish character, you know, and Superman is not.
Yeah,
Superman is a hopeful character.
Yeah, I think you and the team got to the heart of the character. I think you got the heart and soul of the character. But you had the groundwork going into it too. We talk about scripting. We talk about getting the characterization right. I think you had the groundwork there with Superboy. Let's talk a little bit about, it's not the comic book world of Superman. You got to get into the live action world with The Adventures of Superboy. Superboy originally then became The Adventures of Superboy. How did you get involved in the television world of Superboy? This was coming late 80s into the early 90s.
Yeah, so I guess late 80s, Ilya Salkind, the producer of the Superman movies, still had the rights to the Superboy. Now, in the comics at that time, John Byrne had pretty much taken Superboy out of the equation in the comics, so he didn't exist. But he had the rights. He wanted to do the show. And myself and Andy Helfer, who was the Superman editor right before me and who shared a couple of issues with me when I first came on, we got picked by Jeanette Kahn to be the guys who read scripts and worked on stories with the writers of the TV show. So we were basically the quality control for DC on the show. You know, and we came at it with a different kind of head because we knew the limitations of what their budgets were and all that kind of stuff. And it was a lot like The Adventures of Superman. It was tough to put so much superhero action in there. But at the same time, we knew that that's what it needed. And there was a writer's strike going on at the time. And the guy who was the story editor on the show was named Fred Freiberger, who's probably more known for or more infamous for working on the last season of Star Trek, the original Star Trek. Great guy, really nice guy. Maybe not so in touch with the current science fiction stuff that he needed to be. But he was a really nice guy. And he was also like co-chairman of the Writers Guild or something at the time. And they made a deal with Ilya Salkind that said, because you've never produced television before, we have no beef with you yet. So we will give you a pass and you can produce your show. You're allowed to do
There's
this.
No history of animosity yet.
Yeah, you haven't done anything wrong yet. So they let him do it, but then they had this caveat where they needed to hire four people who had never written TV before so that they would get dues from four new members in the Writers Guild. So we were not part of that in the beginning, but they, as the series started going along, they started seeing, you know, these kind of quiet, soft stories about bank robbers and things like that, or homeless people, and all these nice little stories were just not clicking with the audience. So they knew that Andy and I did the superhero and supervillain stuff, and they didn't have to explain to us the show or the limitations that they had. So they gave us a shot, and we wrote a couple of plots, and, you know, then we were in. And then we had to join the Writers Guild, which was okay.
So we're springboarding directly out of the Christopher Reeve era movies. I mean, it's the mm-hmm. same suit. It's the same producer. Yep. You'd obviously seen the movies at that point. You'd seen Supergirl. Your thoughts about coming into this world of Superboy, and how did you approach it knowing the limitations, knowing the budgets, but knowing you had to get Metallo, you had to get Bizarro. You had to get these supervillains to come in. You couldn't just do Gangster of the Week. No, they weren't, but you brought them in.
They weren't there in the first season, and then we did get them in. We actually got in trouble for putting Metallo in.
How did you get in trouble?
At the time,
you broke the budget?
The way they were doing it legally at DC was that if you bought the rights to Batman, you could do any character that first appeared in a Batman comic. You could use anybody you wanted. So if you're doing Superboy, you get the rights to any villain who's appeared in Superboy comics. Metallo was a Superman villain. So after I got in trouble, I was like, but they're the same person. Superboy is Superman. But they said, no, you can't take any characters from the Superman comics.
To the lawyers, they ain't.
It was definitely a lawyer thing, and it was just like, okay, so Bizarro was a Superboy character, and Kryptonite Kid was a Superboy character, but he has no other villains, really. Hmm. Yellow Perry, the reason she was on Superboy is because she was a Superboy villain. But it's like, I went through every Superboy comic, and the old Superboy comics, they were kind of like history lessons. They weren't superhero comics. They were, you know, Superboy time traveling to save Abraham Lincoln. You know, and he would meet all these historical characters, and it's like, this is not Villain of the Month comics. They were very different than the Superman comics. There was no Brainiac. There was none of that stuff.
How did you get Metallo in that? I mean, did you just ask for forgiveness instead of permission?
Well, we didn't know we were going to get in trouble for it.
Wow.
We didn't do it knowing that we were doing something wrong. But I'm glad that we did it, because I thought the Metallo episode was one of the better episodes that they translated from our scripts pretty good.
Yeah, I have a question from a listener. He's also the man behind SuperboyHomepage.com and the Schuster Herald podcast. He's my buddy Sam Rizzo. He is a huge Superboy fan.
Yes, the last time I saw him, it was with Elias Alkind and Stacy Hyduck and the John Newton at an autograph show.
Oh, I mean these folks obviously live and breathe Superboy. So I'm gonna defer to him to some of these, but he was curious about the inspiration behind the episode Mindscape. This is an alien feeding off Superboy's life force by projecting his worst fears. How were you inspired to do it? Was it a little comic book action?
You really don't know. It was inspired by the best Superman story ever done up to that time by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. It basically was for the man who has everything.
That's such a great story.
It was the same kind of idea. So we kind of ripped it off and did our version of it.
It's an homage. You're never ripping
it. It was a fromage, you're right.
It's always an homage.
It was a fromage. Which is very cheesy of us, I know.
There's that crazy humor. There's that crazy Marvel humor coming in.
That Crazy Magazine. That's where I started.
Mike Carlin's Page of Fun. Was it Mike Carlin's Page of Fun?
Mike Carlin's Page O Stuff.
Page of Stuff. That's right.
Which apparently somebody has that online now, so I missed out on that.
I love reading it. Yeah, I love going back through. He also mentions the Kryptonite Kid episode. Oh, friend of the show, Jay Underwood.
Yes.
Kryptonite Kid, taken right from the page of the 1960s comic. He was curious as to what made you bring that character into the series. I think we may have answered that because you may have been limited.
That is exactly what happened was he was one of the only villains in the comics that we could use.
That's
and I think,
fun.
You know, I think that actor did an awesome job. And, you know, he was a good Johnny Storm, too.
Oh, look, we love talking to him. He's so passionate about everything, and that episode is so cool. I'm interested in season 1, episode 11, Kryptonite Kills.
Mm-hmm.
A meteorite falls in a certain
Addis Ababa.
Area. Yeah, Addis Ababa. That boy, that sounds familiar.
That's right out of the movie.
Yeah, and the director of that episode.
Oh yes, I wish I had met him actually.
I was going to ask, did you meet the great Jackie Cooper who played Perry White?
I did not meet him.
Oh,
they shot in Florida, and we were not down there all the time. But we did get to talk to him on the phone at one point, and okay. I am the biggest Little Rascals fan ever born. So it was such a thrill to just talk to him on the phone that it was amazing. I mean, there was a couple of things like this on the Superboy show. It's like the guy that got to play Metallo, Callan, he played the romantic lead in Cat Ballou, which is my second favorite movie of all time.
This is Lee Marvin and Jane Fonda?
Lee Marvin's in that and Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
And Michael Callan, that's his name, which sounds like Michael Carlin. Why couldn't I think of that? But yeah, I got to talk to him on the phone too.
I love that movie. Some of these things are crazy. And even Noelle Neal and Jack Larson appearing. Did you get to meet?
I did not get to meet them.
So many brushes with Superman greatness.
It was really fun. We were down there for the week that they had Mr. Mixer's Piddalick on, which was Michael J. Pollard.
Michael Pollard.
And he was fighting another guy from the Fifth Dimension who was the guy who played Jaws in the James Bond movies.
Richard Kiel.
Yeah.
Man.
So it was actually his 50th birthday, and we all went out to dinner, and it was really fun for me. I got to sit next to Abe Vigoda at dinner, and it was interesting to see that he ordered the fish. you know that I've done these jokes for 30 years now.
Again, anybody that grew up in the 70s is just grinning from ear to ear. If you don't know it, just Google Abe Vigoda and fish.
But I was thrilled to be sitting next to Abe Vigoda. It was like,
of course you were. Who wouldn't be?
It was amazing. Well, there's probably people who wouldn't care. But I'm a fan. I'm a fan of movies and TV. I'm a fan of what I've liked my whole life, like The Little Rascals and things like that. Jackie Cooper would have been great to have met him.
That would have been cool.
He directed one that I wrote was awesome.
You got the callback to Addis Ababa for the Kryptonite. That was pretty cool.
it was great.
Yeah, we're talking about some of the. I mean, look, now you kind of look back, and at the time the show ends, there's a whole thing. It's like the Salkinds wanted to do movies. Could they do Superboy? We don't know what's going to go on with this. The show gets canceled. Are they going to do movies? Correct me if I'm wrong, they had actually written a script that was the finale, and then finale continuing on to the next season, season 5, which we never got, and then that was going to happen because there was this whole legal wrangling in the movies, and it could go, and then Lois and Clark came in, a whole thing. But were you called in at the last minute to write like this two-part finale?
Not that I know of. I never
okay,
saw
how did that come
ending.
About?
It was just that they, honestly, they did, what was it, 100 episodes?
Yeah, 100 episodes.
Yeah, it's exactly 100.
Yep.
They needed 100 for syndication.
Okay.
That fourth season was a little shorter than the other seasons.
Yeah.
It didn't have as many episodes. So they didn't stop because of any Lois and Clark stuff or any other season that was coming. They shot seasons 3 and 4 back-to-back because they knew they were going to stop, as far as I knew.
Okay.
Now, if there was some other wrangling going on behind the scenes, I didn't know about it. Lois and Clark was something that was completely separate and had more to do with us planning the death of Superman once the Lois and Clark actually started happening. But ultimately, I don't think there was never a script that I saw other than what we did.
Okay.
And we wrote that last two-parter with the eye towards saying this is him moving on to become Superman.
Okay. The what I had read was that there was an obituary for a superhero
that was kind of moved into the middle of the season.
Yeah, that was going to be the finale. It was going to continue into season five. They bumped it to the middle and then did the two-parter.
Yeah, I think they just didn't like that it was they didn't feel like it was a good finale.
Okay.
You know, it was a fine episode, but it was a clip show, which it just wouldn't have been. It just didn't do anything for the character.
Okay.
You know, it was really just a retrospective. So my understanding is that they just felt like that wasn't a strong enough ending.
How do you feel about the series as a whole?
I obviously I loved getting the chance to write TV at all. I haven't done anything since then, which may be partly because of what I did do on the show. I liked it. I thought the people were great. I think that Stacy was great right from the start. I felt bad about what happened with John Hames Newton, and I think Jerry Christopher did a good job. I'm still friends to this day with Elon Mitchell Smith, who played Andy McAllister, the roommate of Clark, and Stan Berkowitz came on to seasons 3 and 4 as a story editor, and we brought in Mark DeMattis was a writer on the show from comics. And he actually lived in Florida for a while working on the show. And it really was fun. And I introduced Stan to the guys who did the animated Batman series. So he's become one of their writers and working on the animated Batman universe and the Justice League cartoons and several of the direct-to-videos since then. So, I'm still working with a lot of these guys in one way or another.
Yeah, it's a very cool series.
It's fun.
We got the DVDs.
I'm frustrated that it hasn't really been on TV since it happened. I mean, it's with all of the channels that there are, there's got to be somebody that needs to fill some space. And thank God they finally, at least Warner Archives, put out the last three seasons. Because I knew that putting out that first season was probably not the smartest way to roll out the show because it was a weaker season. And the later stuff got stronger and stronger. Elia stepped back in the third and fourth season, and a producer named Julia Pistor came on board. And she's since gone on to work on Nickelodeon movies and things like that. And it just became a stronger show. I think the third and fourth seasons are really solid. I love all the, the Road's Not Taken episodes.
Yeah, the X-Files, the X-Files feel to it, the X-Files before the X-Files actually occurred. Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, I guess we invented that.
Yeah, you did. No, it's funny you even mentioned.
Stan Berkowitz was a very inspired guy. He was very good for taking the show in a different direction, which was really great.
No, it's funny you put it in the context that you did. You and I need to have a separate conversation at some point. DC Entertainment, you are a DC guy. You loaded up the truck. You moved to Beverly in 2011.
Yep.
What is your role currently with DC Comics?
Well, I'm DC's liaison with Warner Brothers Animation. So I'm basically quality control again on our the scripted animated shows that they do at Warner Animation. You know, that's things like Young Justice, Teen Titans Go, Beware the Batman. We do 3 direct-to-video movies set in the DC Universe every year. We do 2 Lego movies every year. We do something called Batman Unlimited, which is kind of tied to some Mattel stuff as well. So we're doing a lot of material. And there's some shows and things coming up that I can't tell you about.
That's fine. We're spoiler free here. We enjoy being revealed as you.
Well, and I enjoy
it.
Keeping a job for 30 years, so I'm going to keep that going.
We're going to keep that going. What have you nixed?
Oh, I can't.
Nero.
Tell you that 'cause it was embarrassing.
Oh, give me one thing where somebody came in and went, here okay, look, here's what
you
we want to do.
For the TV shows?
For anything. Here's what we want to do for this
character. All right,
character.
Here's one that...
Give me something you went, we're not doing that.
Well, when we were doing the Marvel-DC crossovers... And we had, and we came up with the idea for Amalgam Comics, where the characters would kind of blend together.
This is Captain America, and
Superman.
Patriot. You're right, Super Patriot.
And so that was really fun. And people at the time were asking us, so what was the characters that you didn't do? And I was like, we did them all. Every good one that came in, we did, because there was nothing that we didn't do. The only one we would not allow to happen was giant-sized manservant, and it was going to be Alfred Jarvis. And we just couldn't find a place where that would work.
Did you just make that up?
Well, we made it up then. That was really the only one we didn't do. The only one that was good. There was a lot of
a great
dumb
Elseworlds
combo
book
that would never have happened. Oh, but giant-sized manservant was the greatest idea of all time that we didn't do. So
that's fantastic. You mentioned,
any ambitious listeners out there, you can start drawing that comic up right now.
That's cool. I would love to see it.
And then we'll send the lawyers at you.
You mentioned you had a recording session canceled today.
Yes.
Can you tell
just
us?
Moved. It's got moved to
shifted.
It.
Right, shifted. Can you tell us what that is?
It's for the DC Superhero Girls material that we're putting out.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen any of that online.
Yeah.
That's a bunch of shorts that are online right now. There's going to be some movies and TV shows eventually with that stuff too. But we were going to be recording some shorts, and they're trying to get it done before the end of the year. And it's just, you got a lot of actors to line up for that kind of stuff. So it was just something that was scheduled for today, but then it got moved.
Are you sitting in on these recording sessions and guiding?
Not every show that we do.
Okay,
not
some
every
of them?
Show that we do. Yeah, but I go on the DC Girls one, I definitely go too, because it's some different directors and different actors, you know, and sometimes you got to just be there to say Themyscira the right way, you know, and they don't know these made up words. They don't actually know what the pronunciation is.
Okay,
Kaldar,
that touches a little bit on a question I have for you then. We're mm-hmm. talking about everything's a comic book project these days. It's animation, it's live action, it's film, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The importance of finally bringing comic book experts into this world. Can you speak to it from that perspective as the comic book expert as to the importance of just having a guy there that knows how to pronounce the stuff?
It was happening with things like the Superboy show for, you know, 30 years ago. But it was only happening on the smaller projects. It wasn't happening on the movies as much. But now, you know, Jeff Johns, who is my supervisor here and is the chief creative officer at DC Entertainment, he loves DC characters so much, and he's done such a great job himself as a creator. He's in the room with all the filmmakers now, and they want him in the room because he's got ideas. And, you know, they're not afraid to take a good idea no matter where it comes from. In the past, that seemed to be less the case with some TV shows and movies. They kind of wanted to just do their own thing and be left alone. I mean, nobody wants what could be a speed bump in the room. They don't want us there to slow the projects down, but what they needed to understand, and now they know, is that we're not there to impede progress. We're there to facilitate. You know, it's in our interest, too, to have these shows happen, and it's just... You know, it just took a while, and partly because we're out here now, that makes it easier on a lot of projects.
That's why Stan went out there in the 80s.
He didn't have, you know, Warner Brothers, Kevin Tujihara forcing everybody to at least open the door.
No, he did not. He was grassroots.
He was a lone voice screaming in the wind.
and now look where we're at. Look, this might be a question more... for him, but I'm talking to the guy that's got his, if you don't have your foot in both worlds, you at least have a glass to the door.
Yeah.
Let's say this.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm kind of wondering why the Marvel model doesn't work for DC, and maybe it will. Shared universe. With DC, it's like there's TV Flash and then there's Movie Flash.
Well, we got to see how that plays out.
Okay, can Movie Flash be TV Flash? It's not, but
we've had parallel worlds before anybody else.
Oh.
So this is not going to be a problem in any way. That is
Mr. Infinite Crisis thing to figure out.
Yep.
Did you just go Infinite Crisis on me?
Well, you never know. We never say never.
Oh, did you just drop something on me? I think maybe you did. That.
Well, you just I was trying to get out of the room.
You got out of the room, but man, you just gave me some hope. Because I'm just like kind of looking at this thing going, oh, Grant Gustin is just so good.
Well, first, the real reality is that Marvel has been doing a great job. And they've hit the ground running for 7 years now. So they got a little head start on us. So we definitely have to do some things differently. Warner Brothers is a studio that operates differently than the Marvel studio has been doing it. So they have their own, you know, quirks and systems that work for them. So it's automatically going to be a little different. You know, it's definitely going to be a little more...
corporate?
I don't know. Well, it's just going to be... It's more of an auteur thing where they hire a guy and they let that guy do it. Chris Nolan stuff is the best example of that.
Yeah.
And Zack Snyder is now doing this now. But now DC's out here, and Zack is clearly a comic book guy. If you just look at his previous work, he's a guy who gets it. You know, Watchmen, you know, looked as good as it did because he was a fan of the comic. And 300 looked as good as it did because he got what was going on in the comic. So the guy gets it, and he's happy to have comic book guys around him. I mean, what everybody forgets, honestly, is that the Adventures of Superman TV show in the early 50s was produced by DC editors who flew out to California and started up the first syndicated show. There was no other syndicated shows at that time. And they were the producers and the staff. You know, they were the guys who...
They set the groundwork.
So DC is the company that's been producing their stuff the longest.
No, and you guys are crushing it on TV and in animation. It's just, I want that so much to carry over into the movie universe.
Well, the thing I love about our TV stuff more than anything is how, yes, we have a bunch of superhero shows on, and obviously the ones that are on the CW, Crisscross and tie-in, but we also have iZombie, and we have Gotham, and we have... we had Constantine, and they're all different flavors.
Constantine's still popping up on Arrow.
Yeah, he at least one time did.
It's going to pop up in the Legends.
We have a show called
too.
Lucifer coming up. That's another flavor, and they're all solid, you know. And Constantine, because it was on NBC, it went away because the ratings were not high enough for NBC. Doing as well as Flash was doing, almost exactly the same.
Right.
But CW has a different standard or a different cutoff.
Ratings bar a little lower.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that was, that was the fate of Constantine.
Oh, I'm hoping Grant Gustin will pop up on the movie screen at some point. Look, let's talk.
Well,
about
don't count on what I said to matter.
You gave me a little bit of hope. That's all I need. For fanboys, that's all we need. A little bit of hope. Let's talk about some of these upcoming projects. Batman: Bad Blood. February 2nd, 2016.
Yeah.
You've seen it?
Yeah.
You likey?
Yeah. Yep, it really is fun. And I think it's going to be a great chance to see a couple of characters that you haven't seen in action before in either live action or animation. So that'll be fun.
Nice. Batman: The Killing Joke. Give me something.
Yeah.
Give me something.
I can't give you anything.
Give me something.
They tied me to a chair and said, I can't give you anything.
You can give me one thing.
Okay, it's got the Joker in it.
Not for long.
That was it. That's the thing I got.
I love Michael Uslan. He's saying it to all the ladies and gentlemen at Warner and DC Animation from Sam Register and Mikey Carlin.
Yay.
And the whole group over there, they're brilliant in terms of what they're doing. I still contend some of the best Batman stories we've ever seen in media have come through the animation. Check you out.
He lumped me in there. He's nice to me. Well, I got to tell you, this is the secret about my job, and you got to not tell my boss, is that the Warner Animation guys love our characters sometimes even more than we do. They don't want to change things. They don't want to try something different sometimes. And they're not they're not interested in diminishing any of the stuff that they touch. They want these characters to be the characters that they loved when they were kids. You know, if you watch Batman Brave and Bold, the guy who worked on that, James Tucker, is now doing our direct-to-video movies. He told me that his Batman Brave and Bold show was his version of what he thought the Batman 66 TV show was when he was a kid. He thought it was real.
Wow.
So even though it's got some humor and stuff in it, it was like he was playing it kid straight in Batman Brave and Bold. And I said, that's a guy who gets it.
Yeah.
So those guys make my job easy. They're not trying to pull any fast ones. They're not trying to, you know, sneak stuff through. They're not trying to do anything like that. You know, and then at the same time, we got something like Teen Titans Go, which is the top-rated show, not amongst fans. But it's a great illustrator to the idea that sometimes a pile of comic book fans is not enough for ratings to actually soar. So
you got to reach an ancillary audience.
Teen Titans Go reaches people who may never have read a comic.
Yeah.
And hopefully will get them to go read a comic. And it's like if it's not for the 50-year-olds who have been around this stuff for their whole lives, what's so bad about there being something for the 5 and 10-year-olds who have 40 years ahead of them of loving this stuff? It's like that. We don't have enough entry point stuff. And so I'm the biggest advocate for Teen Titans Go. And that's one that is so not connected to our continuity. Even though I think the character is all acting character, it's not anything that I have to worry about. It's almost like that one has no rules. That's Warner Brothers cartoon rules. Character Daffy Duck can die at the end of one episode and then still be alive in the next one. That one has the Warner Brothers seal of approval in terms of comedy, and I think and I am a comedy fan as well. So I just think that there's some value to that. That doesn't mean that there's not going to be, you know, the straight animation that we do for direct to videos.
There's an audience for everything. Yeah, there's room for everything. You're not going to get me off this. Have you had lunch with Mark Hamill?
I did.
That's all I need to know. Justice League versus Titans. You had a date on this?
Not that I know of.
How awesome is this?
But they're all... Oh, I think it's that one's going to be great.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Wait, like first quarter, second quarter, 2016?
I guess if there's already something in the first quarter, it's probably in the second quarter.
There we go. You talked about Batman 66. Maybe that was Batman Brave and the Bold. We are actually getting a Batman 66. Can you give us anything on this? We know Adam West. We know Burt Ward. They're coming back.
They're
voicing the characters. Of course they are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they've talked about it.
Yeah, well, when they talked about it, they were talking about the Robot Chicken special. But everybody got it wrong.
Well, did we?
Well, maybe. Here's what I got to say.
Would you comment.
Time limit is up.
Till the time limit is up. If in a perfect world, would you have Julie Newmar join them?
If I had my way, yes. And I'd have her join me as well.
Facebook, where are you, Mike Carlin? How can we find out more about you?
Facebook is waiting for me. I have to be on this interview. I can't be on Facebook.
You are out there. Is it Mike Carlin?
I am Mike Carlin.
You are Mike Carlin. Are you on Twitter? Are you Facebook? Where else are you?
No, I don't tweet. I don't tweet.
You don't tweet?
I just Facebook.
You're grumbling about SNL. Like, why are you still watching SNL?
Because I watched the first episode when it aired. I was a groupie.
Stop
and went
doing
to,
this to yourself.
I went to 28 episodes in the studio with the real cast from the beginning.
Yeah.
But I'm
not ready for
not
primetime players.
I'm not a guy who thinks that they were the only good cast, and that's why I keep watching. I keep watching because
holding out
another
can I,
good
can I
cast
be the
will
intervention?
Come.
Can I be the intervention here?
Other people have tried.
Can I be the guy that tries and succeeds? Can I be your intervention? Can I just stop you from watching SNL?
Nope. No, because I'm going to be the guy that's there to tell you when it's back.
You're the guy every week that's telling us it's bad. He's out there.
Don't listen to me if you don't agree, but it's bad.
It's really bad. I feel bad. I'm like, I want you to I want to hug you.
But
I want to go through Facebook and hug you and stop you.
It's been bad before. It's been bad before, and it's recovered, and it will happen again. And I am there because I am, you know what? When they canceled the X-Men, and then they came back as reprints, even though I had those stories already, I bought the reprints to keep my numbers up, keep my numbers in order. And I didn't even know they were going to bring the X-Men back, but then I had all the numbers. That's the kind of fanboy I am. I've got to watch every episode so I keep my numbers up.
This is so Larry David of you. Oh, this is why we love Mike Carlin. This is why we love Mike. Look, in Connecticut, that was amazingly cool for me. I loved meeting up with you. The rest of the people that killed Superman, Mitch Halleck brought you guys together. That was fun. I hope we can do it again. I hope we can meet up soon. I can't wait for all the DC goodness that's coming our way. I thank you for the little teasers we had. Thank you for everything. Thank you for being awesome.
Thank you for being there to witness all this stuff.
Oh, we're here.
If there's nobody watching it, we're not. We're working in a vacuum.
We're here. We can't wait to see what's next. Thanks so much for joining me in the lair today on Comic Book Central.
All righty, man. See you soon.
Always fun to talk to a fanboy. Even better when that fanboy is walking the hallowed halls of DC Comics and calling some of the shots. Good stuff there. My thanks to Mike Carlin for joining me today. And just for being totally awesome this summer at Terrificon. That DC Animation Q&A with Kevin Conroy, that was really fun. Mike brought stuff to hand out to the fans. He brought swag. He signed it. Kevin Conroy signed the stuff. The fans ate it up. It was fantastic. What can I say? Two great guys. Go check that episode out if you haven't done it already. You like DC animation? Hey, who doesn't? I love it. You love it. Check this out. Justice League Unlimited, the complete series. It's a good one. It is now on Blu-ray from the Warner Archive Collection. You can find that at wbshop.com. We talked about it. Batman Bad Blood from Warner Home Entertainment. That's going to be available in digital HD January 19th. 2016, Blu-ray and DVD February 2nd. And just announced, I just got the email, Lego DC Comics Superheroes Justice League Cosmic Clash. That's right, a new DC Lego flick. That's going to be awesome. It arrives on Blu-ray and DVD March 1st. DC Animation not slowing down at all. I'm going to put those links up in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. And that is where you can find each and every episode of Comic Book Central. Check out the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. Tweet, retweet at Comic Book CTRL. Hashtag share the lair. You can share those episodes on Facebook. Retweet them on Twitter. I really appreciate it. It gets it out to so many more people. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on iTunes. You get them all that way. You won't miss an episode. And I appreciate it if you leave a review while you're there. If you're not using iTunes, Blueberry and Stitcher, we're on those services. And I want to hear from you, each and every listener out there. If you love Superboy, if you have a favorite episode of the television series, if you want to talk about the death and return of Superman, Superman Doomsday, the animated movie, that was pretty cool too. We talked about that with Adam Baldwin when he was on the show as well. Let me know what you think. Drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net. If you're on the website, just click that Signal Me tab. Sam Rizzo wrote in, helped me out with my homework this week. So thanks, Sam. I appreciate that. Be sure to check out the Superboy homepage for all things Superboy. And be sure to tell Sam Stuberman sent you. All right, folks, that about wraps things up for today. I am up and away. And I'm taking the Indiana Jones red line this time on the map. I'm taking that all the way to Washington, D.C. If you are jonesing to hear about the Indiana Jones exhibition there in the nation's capital, if you want to hear about all the props, the costumes, the MacGuffins, the man in the hat, you're going to hear about it on the IndieCast at theindiecast.com. That is where my podcasting partner Keith Voss and I, we show up there on occasion from time to time. We host a comic book segment. Maybe you've heard it. If you haven't, check it out. The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones. We have that on there. This is going to be a special segment for an upcoming episode of the IndieCast. We're also going to do another Further Adventures of Indiana Jones, our review of Indiana Jones, Thunder in the Orient. So I'm going to be recording those things over the next few weeks. Not sure when they're going to air on the IndieCast, but go to the website, theindiecast.com. Subscribe to it on iTunes. If you get that, again, you're going to get all those episodes. You won't miss it. You'll get those episodes as soon as they drop. I'll also post the links on my Facebook page. You are going to hear our Indiana Jones adventure very soon. After I record that adventure, then I'm going to be back in the lair Saturday, January 2nd. January already. January 2nd. Where did the year go? It flew by. Got a few things I'm working on right now for Comic Book Central. So if you got some time off, everybody's got some time off. Many of you are going to be doing some traveling of your own. Download the episodes. Catch up on the ones you might have missed. Perfect time to catch up on those episodes. Share them with your friends and family. Tell them all about Comic Book Central. Next episode is going to be back January 2nd. Watch the Facebook and Twitter pages for the latest guest announcements. I'm going to be posting everything on those pages. Until next time, folks, safe travels. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Walker! What do you want? You've got to stop that and come back to the Institute with me.
For the first time in my life, I'm free to do exactly what I want. I'm not going to stop.
You're dying.
Well, I hope I die before I get old.
Let me help you.
Help me.
Help me! You're the one who made me! This way!
Walker! You've got to come back with me. You'll die.
That'll make two of us.
They're working on a cure for you now.
It's gonna be too late, Superboy. For both of us.
That's right, boys. Here I am.